This is Cloistered Away, a podcast for mothers, homeschoolers, and women eager to develop a rich family culture within their homes. Here, we move against the modern hustle and cultural noise to slow down and consider how to live with wisdom, beauty, and joy in the various places in which God has set us. I'm your host, Bethany Douglas, the voice behind the Cloistered Away website and Substack. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back to the Cloistered Away podcast, where today you're joining myself, Bethany Douglas, and my husband, Mark.
Hello.
We're going to continue our conversation on parenting and specifically talk about parenting daughters today. If you missed our last episode where we talk about parenting sons, you may want to go back and listen to that. But I think each one stands on its own and it doesn't matter the order. But what I would like to say is that I probably should have said on the last one is just to say from the outset that all children are a blessing and a gift from the Lord. So we actually see them as being each individually created by God with the Imago Dei. Today, culturally, we're kind of in this swamp of toward egalitarianism, which has also degendered and is increasingly degendering our culture to where it really does cause us as parents to question, is it okay to relate to our children differently as a son than a daughter? And so Mark and I say no, that there are ways that we have actually created the same offerings in terms of education, in terms of opportunities, in terms of experience, that we have had those for all four of our children the same. But there are many ways in which we relate to them as in our parenting, in the ways that we partner with who they are, and we see in terms of their destiny as being both male and female, that there are unique things that they need from us in their parenting. So I remember reading from Kim John Payne, who wrote Simplicity Parenting and also The Soul of Discipline. I believe it's in The Soul of Discipline that he actually talks about Michelangelo carving David. And he says he didn't carve David. He just is actually cutting away what wasn't David until David was revealed. And I think in much the same ways, when our children are born into our family or adopted and become a part of our family, we only know one thing for certain, and that is that aside from God placing them in our household, that they actually have a soul, they have a mind, will, and emotions, much like we talked about earlier in the season, and also that they have the Imago Dei in them, that they are imprinted with the presence of God and with the image of God. So when we think about who our children are, we don't actually know. There's a whole lot about who our children are in terms of their giftings, in terms of their sensibilities, in terms of who they will be and how they will function in the world that we don't know at the outset. And much like Michelangelo, we are partnering with God and with one another in our marriage, in our parenting, the decisions that we made to kind of cut away what is not so that the Lord can reveal in time who they are. So today, as we talk about daughters and specifically how we have parented specifically some ways with our daughters, I think there's also the same verse that we're going to return to that we read for our sons. Would you like to read that again?
Sure, sure. This is the ESV. And remember, last time we focused on the front part of the verse, which is, may our sons in their youth be like plants full grown, or as we said, prematurely mature. But the second part of the verse is, and our daughters like corner pillars cut for the structure of a palace. So I take that to mean, first of all, that there is a cutting and a chiseling, to Bethany's point, that there is some formation that happens, mm-hmm. right? And those daughters are, if you think about them in terms of pillars, a pillar is stable. It's elegant, it's beautiful, and it's able to hold up a royal household. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a better summation or encapsulation of what a daughter and then a wonderfully formed young woman is. Mm-hmm. Emotionally stable, spiritually stable, cognitively stable, elegant, beautiful. You know, there's entire classes in graduate school related to ancient columns and mm-hmm. their structure and their form. And then, of course, being able to hold up the royal houses. Notice that the single column existing out in the middle of nowhere, that doesn't make any sense. It's part of a household. And so it's not about ultimately this extreme individualism. It's about how am I integrated into this household that is much more than me as an individual, me and my uniqueness or personal identity. Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. I mean, when I'm looking at who I hope and pray that my daughters become, that's a great picture. Mm-hmm. When I think about who it is that I want my sons to marry, that's a great picture. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's great. So much like we did when we were talking about sons, there's a lot of things that were very similar in our parenting of sons and daughters in the childhood years, in those early formative years, in early childhood and childhood development, that equally we wanted them to have personal habits, to know how to brush their teeth, how to make their bed, how to get dressed in the day, how to tie their shoes, how to read, how to write. A lot of those things, those offerings were the same. They would have to be adapted based on each individual, their gifts and such, and the ways that their aptitudes. But
so that's like basic character and basic right. capabilities.
Exactly.
Okay.
They all participated in learning how to cook meals, how to be able to do laundry. So there wasn't this kind of the way that we think of gendered roles when we think about the 1950s and we think about the, you know, women not partaking in education because they need to be housewives and they need to be able to do laundry and cook. And men don't need to worry about that stuff because they're going to get married at some point. So we need to focus on them getting a job and being able to work and make money. And they're going to be out of the house, not doing anything. That is not what we're speaking to. Those roles will take place as they grow into their own family. But as young women, as our daughters were children, what were some ways that, so you talked about, Mark, with the sons that you would gonk with them,
gonking,
or that there were ways that you guys might interact together, talk about things that felt very kind of rough and tumble. Did you have that kind of, because I know the girls loved to wrestle and loved to climb trees. Mm-hmm. We had very active, I mean, our daughters. Mm-hmm. I also should say our daughters at the time of this recording are 15 and 17. Our sons are 19 and 20. So just to kind of give you some reference as to where we are right now. But thinking back to early childhood, are there ways that you specifically wanted to relate to your daughters?
Yeah. I think part of what I felt I was reacting against was a tendency to overly princess-ize mm-hmm. Daughters. Mm-hmm. There's just some strange currents in our world, even in Christian world, where mm-hmm. it's like a daughter's supposed to think of herself as a princess or, you know, and there's just this high emphasis on that. Like it's only about tea parties or it's only about, you know, date nights with dad or whatever, you know. And I think that where I hope the things that I was doing that were important to them was basically asking them to articulate thoughts, to show me art, mm-hmm. to show me the things that their hands were doing, mm-hmm. to show me the ways that they were expressing something of themselves in the beautification of whether that was doing a little sewing thing or it was doing watercolors or calligraphy or whatever it was. I wanted them to see that they were celebrated for when they bring beauty to mm-hmm. things, because that is part of that, making a beautiful place and adding the fruit and taking a little thing and making it wonderful. And there's something very feminine about that. And seeing the way that they would help with you with preparing meals or setting the table or writing name places cards mm-hmm. next to plates. Those were the sorts of things that I wanted to celebrate with them. It wasn't that we can crack heads and be rough and tumble, but that they are really valued and honored. You know, one of the things we've talked about before is that we'll do like a Shabbat meal on before Sabbath meal. And that's really a time of honoring the mother in the household. So I just wanted them to see that the women in a house are highly esteemed and honored mm-hmm. for the values that they bring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to go back to the princess thing, because I think there is something as being daughters to the king, just like being sons to the king, mm-hmm. that you do want your daughters to rise up into, in terms of...
I think I was talking about the Disneyfication of that.
I think that is actually what you're talking about, mm-hmm. which I wanted to clarify. So the world of Disney was not really a big part of our childhood, our children's childhood, and... I think for that, we watched the Disney movies, but we never kind of made a thing of it.
We didn't make a pilgrimage to Florida or California.
Because the ways that often Disney princesses, I mean, there are some exceptions. A lot of them are taken from fairy tales, but they've been distorted. They've been, you know, there's kind of this, you know, dad and daughter relationship where... the kind of that wrapped around my finger type deal yeah. that, you know, the daughter can be manipulative or, you know, like Ariel, or can be, you know, kind of make these decisions, or there's an absent father or something there. It does not actually show what we wanted to mm-hmm. elevate for our daughters. Anyway, I just wanted to clarify for that. But to say that there is...
Well, you don't have to give me an opportunity to take a swipe at Disney. I'm ready. Johnny on the spot.
In terms of feminine types that we present before our daughters, though, it's the same as the sons. That, of course, they're going to engage with movies, but hopefully that those movies aren't their sole expression for a masculine or feminine type. That they're having actual pictures of courageous, young, beautiful, strong women in... you know, when they engage with Narnia, which is always like an easy go-to for me, but also in so many other stories that we've read, even when you see some of the women in scriptures, that they're actually having these heroes to actually rise up to, which is what you're talking about in talking about the Proverbs 31 woman.
Yeah. Abigail, Esther. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are, that it's creating this feminine ideal that calls them up into virtue, that calls them up into intellect,
right.
that calls them up into strength, into knowing how to lay your life down for other people in the same ways that there were other things for the sons that we talked about, mm-hmm. but wanting to see those. So I guess when we talk about the childhood years, so I would say... our daughters are very physically active. They love climbing things. They love hiking. They love rock climbing. Both of them do, but they've always had very active childhoods, and even into their adolescent years have been very active. So,
yeah, and I think you're driving to, there is a point sort of where it shifts around 13 or so. And now they're entering in the world of women. So again, we had a ceremony, a bat mitzvah for them, where they're entered into the world of women, and older women celebrate them, receive them, pray over them, and really commit to being there to help them navigate the years ahead, for sure. But that's also a shift in like, hey, you know what? You're going to sit differently in, you know, in your dress, and you're going to... you're going to be dressing differently. You need to think about modesty. You need to think about, there was just a transition into a self-awareness mm-hmm. and a responsibility that is the natural progression out of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And
for sure.
One of the things that I remember we sat down with them a few years ago was we just talked about that bar of gold. Do you remember us mm-hmm. having that conversation? Just that, okay, they have extreme value and in their personhood and their bodies are very important and precious and valuable. And it's rather like a young woman who would walk around with a bar of gold in her hands, just right there at her chest level, walking around with a bar of gold, how you wouldn't want to parade that around because it's so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And about how, I mean, we live in a college town and we see a ton of young women who absolutely just parade their physical attributes around
mm-hmm.
and about how that is really drawing the wrong attention and sending the wrong kinds of messages. So we just talked about modesty says you keep that gold bar covered
mm-hmm.
and you're discreet with it and that is for your husband. And that, so that was just a good picture for, I think I actually bought them each a gold coin and gave mm-hmm. that to them and said, I want you to really think about that. So when, as you're in teenage years and you're about to head out the door and I am not okay with something that you're wearing, that's not me just being a fussy weirdo. That's me saying, I don't like how much you're showing that bar of gold. Mm-hmm. I think you need to like cover that up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to think of something that would be one of those.
Yeah. So there's a lot examples. Of specifics. There's a lot of specifics as to, for as much as there's been a kind of a pushback and a diminishing of masculinity for the sons, that kind of pushing them out into and giving them room, I would say, to actually step into masculine strength. There also is, by the same turn, the push of women towards, in that name of egalitarianism, that men have always been able to do whatever, so women should be able to do whatever. And there's kind of this idea that you should be able to go where you want and wear what you want and do what you want, and there should be no consequence for that. And it is not, I know this is a really tricky topic when we start like kind of getting into sexual predators of, you know, all sorts, which we don't need to kind of spend tons of time there. But it is a real concern, even in the childhood years for both sons and daughters. That's been a conversation that we've always wanted to have very clearly with our children. But as kind of they're stepping into these adolescent and young years as young women, that wanting to actually say and remind them that the world is not their friend.
That's right.
And that while they have very good relationships and healthy relationships with myself and with Mark and with their brothers, and they've been in a sphere of influence where there's a high respect and regard for them as women, as to what they say, as to what they have to share, as to who they are, as to how they present themselves, that won't be the same everywhere they go. And that's a tough thing to have to tell your daughter. Like that's a really, we still, even as our elder daughter is getting ready to go to college, that's one of the conversations that we're having to have about how you relate with the world. Like when you're going out into the world, and these aren't new conversations, but just a new iteration of this conversation. So
I even, to push your point a little further, I even think that's part of the rage about the modern liberated woman feminist mm-hmm. Frustration is that there's that desire to be able to do anything, say anything, wear anything, go anywhere, behave however I want.
Mm-hmm.
And the world is supposed to be changed and altered, and we're supposed to expect more of men, et cetera. And yet, like the rest of the world didn't get that memo.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are some brutal realities that exist for women who operate that independently, that they come out from underneath male headship or covering or the protection of a father or a husband, and then they run out there, and there are sometimes really horrible, disastrous consequences. And I wish it wasn't that way too. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it is a tough world, but you know, our daughters need to be able to see that for what it is, mm-hmm. and go, yeah, you know what? I am going to take my brothers. My brothers are going to take me to that thing, or I better ask my dad, or I'm not going to be out after 10 PM for that reason. Those are the kinds of considerations that they have to start grappling with as young women.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like this is a little bit more of a specific conversation than we had about sons. We were having the same conversations, though, with them from just a different angle about how they actually present themselves virtuously as young men, how they esteem, you know, others, ways that they actually practice humility. So there are, this is not a single conversation only happening with our daughters. We just happen to be kind of getting into that a little bit more here. And maybe it's just because of the ages of our daughters right now where we are. But it does feel like there's a cultural tide in terms of the raising daughters right now that is really hard. I mean, it is really hard, even when, because you're trying to say what the world, the boundaries that the world is kicking against for women, whatever those boundaries, we could list several right off the top of our head, even down to defining what a woman is. Those boundaries actually were given by the Lord. Mm-hmm. And to think about femaleness being a gift from the Lord and being an honor. And when you look at femininity in the scriptures, and when you see it actually embodied in some of the characters in scriptures, you see the beauty. You see the way that Abigail lays her life down for her husband, even when he's a fool, and protects him and his life, and protects their household before the king. You know, you see the way Esther lays down her life for her people. You see the way Sarah, at times, even when Abraham foolishly won't even tell the truth about who she is, the way that she wisely acts in those places. So there's so many different.
Yeah, just like that pillar, she adds prestige to a house that, yes, could have cratered on one side, yes, a bit. Yeah, yes. Also, I didn't think I would get into this, but it is fascinating to me that there's been a resurgence in the young women in their love and affection for the TV show Friends. That's had a huge, it's come back in a big way in the last few years. And that's a fascinating narrative of the idea of the young boss babe who is independent, fiercely independent, goes off to New York or Boston, runs a big professional career, lives, is, you know, sexually liberated, et cetera, and just gets to have this sort of beautiful and what we would call now Instagrammable life. But we've been trying to talk again and again about how, yeah, that is an old storyline that I think is starting to look a little threadbare in these days, where you realize, okay, I did get the flowering, beautiful Instagrammable life, but it wasn't a fruiting life. Mm-hmm. It didn't bear fruit. And that is such a modern deception or lie that says you should be aiming for that always flowering life, but forego the fruiting, which is, the fruiting is when you are installed in one of those kinds of houses or a palace. That's where there's real life and vitality. And that's, mm-hmm, actually where you get the fullest expression of who you are.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And to see that, I think to see that and to say it's good, like to agree with God and say that is good.
Your order is good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think is so countercultural and just really can be really confrontational for young women, but even for adult women, even as mothers. You know, there's so many friends who either have broken relationships with their mothers or who have a, didn't have that modeled, like a nurturing presence mm-hmm. in their mothers, because there was this need to go be something in the world. And so they didn't have actually a presence. They didn't have a presence at home, or even if there was a, you know, I know some mothers are required to work for just the economy of the home, but even then there wasn't this nurturing sense of motherhood that was brought back to them, or the idea of femininity and the way that could be embodied and presented to them. So like when you think of mimesis, this Greek term, that's just, it's where we get the word mimicry. And, you know, you think the Searcy Institute talks a lot about mimetic teaching. This is like a little bit down the homeschool path, but it does actually go beyond academics and our intellect to say that there is more is taught than more is caught than taught is a true statement. And when we are living mimetically, meaning that our children are watching us, they're watching how we relate to one another. They're watching how we actually carry ourselves as men and women, how we relate to hardship, how we relate to our work, how we relate to them, how we relate to mealtime, all these different ways that our children are taking that in. And so when there's a rejection of the home in the mother's heart, when the mother feels that there is, oh, you know, when's 9 o'clock? Or when, right. when can I get out of the, you know, away from these kids? When there's this kind of rejection of home or place.
And also I would say, and or the rejection of femininity.
Yes. Like, even the rejection of the self, the hatred of the self, the hatred of being a woman. Mm-hmm. That is actually being taught to our children. And so I would say for other women, the greatest delight in modeling for both my sons and my daughters is not that I'm perfect, because I'm not, but it is actually showing them the joy of being a mother, the joy of being a wife, the joy of having a home, even when we have had some really hard years with our house. I mean, when we moved into our current house 10 years ago, Mark fell through the floor the first day we moved in. There were fleas. I mean, it was a mess, and we've renovated it and restored it over the last decade. But, you know, seeing our children, even when there's like the place, the physical place you inhabit that you want to reject and you want to curse it, and instead you choose to bless it, and instead you choose to say, this is the place God has given me. Thank you, God. And then you work into it and you create beauty there. That is like the greatest, those are the greatest lessons that we can mm-hmm. impart to our children.
Yeah.
We are their first feminine and masculine type, the mother and the father.
I was going to say there was a few other things that I feel like we kind of focused on in their teenage years has been, hey, most of what you're doing is trying to steward all of the blessings and the talents God's given you. So God gave you a great mind. You should totally be utilizing that to the best of your ability. Mm-hmm. You should be academically significant, and that there should be some real power to the way that you think and the way that you write and communicate, and you should be maximizing that gifting. Your hands can create, so there's a stewardship component there about what you're creating. Put some makeup on, smile, be pretty, be joyful, make encouraging remarks to other people so that they know that you're for them. Bring value wherever you are. If we're going to have a meal, make it the best meal that you can make it, and mm-hmm. make the table as gorgeous as you can make it. There's some part of it that's just like, I want to be the kind of person, and this is true male or female, that you give me a dime and I'm going to turn it into a dollar. There needs to be sort of a mindset like that. And I think that that positions them very well, as opposed to flaunting their gold bar around to get mm-hmm. male attention. It's like, no, you'll pick up male attention when you are cheerful, willing to help, throw in and bring value, and, you know.
Well, just femininity is beautiful.
Absolutely.
Like, culturally speaking, there's so much that we kind of get imparted into us culturally that says this is what being a woman is. Mm-hmm. And it's like wearing these types of clothes or doing these sorts of things or having the freedom to do this financially or be able to go to these places on your own, being independent. And while our children are growing toward or are independent and they are growing in strength, I think the ways to beauty culturally are always dealing with the surface of things versus when they experience true femininity. When you experience a woman who is confident in her place with the Lord, who knows who she is, who actually enjoys intellectual conversation, who is confident in what she reads and talking about it, mm-hmm. who can communicate ideas clearly, who knows how to take care of herself physically or knows how to take care of those around her or be kind and gracious, that is beautiful. That is so alluring.
Yeah, but it also doesn't discount the fact that most men are fairly dense and they don't generally understand the deep inner beauty. Initially.
I'm not even talking about an inner beauty. I'm saying all of those things are...
In the totality. Yeah.
That is a beautiful person. And I think we limit ourselves when we think about femininity as just being, okay, I'm going to wear a dress and put on some makeup. Now I'm feminine.
Of course not.
That's one aspect of it. But also cultivating a virtuous character, understanding
sure.
prudence, understanding fortitude. You know, all of these things are a part of the whole...
I just meant to say that men typically don't notice the prudence on first blush. That what turns their head is the pretty girl, and then they start to notice and can really appreciate all of the extra. Guys are fairly, I don't know.
Sure, but I do think that there's femininity is beyond being just physically.
Absolutely,
pretty,
of course.
I'm meaning to say,
yeah.
And I do push back to say. I think when a truly beautiful woman, and it would be somebody who takes care of herself physically, meaning
true.
That she's not just like in her pajamas and, you know, it's...
Boy, that's really become a thing, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been a thing. But I think the totality of a person is what I'm speaking to. So
yeah.
Anyway, so we have... I think, is there anything more that you want to
say? No, I think
we
got it.
I feel like there's always so much to say on these topics. It's starting to downpour outside, which is a little bit distracting, but lovely. Not going to complain here.
That's right. Rain and summer in Texas.
But in terms of the conversation about growing young men and young women in the Lord, I'm sure this is going to circle back around in a lot of ways because it just does.
That's right. Take care.
All right. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.